There is a place that is spoken about only in whispers. A dark area that spawns the beginnings of urban legends. A place where anything can happen and usually does. During the light of day, it hides just outside of view. But when the sun goes down, spirits, creatures of the night, roam free, and things do go bump in the night. It is in every state and every country, and there is no escaping it, no matter how safe you feel behind your locked doors and latched windows. So we invite you to turn down the lights and turn up your radio while we join Dave Schrader and Tim Dennis, your hosts, on a journey into the darkness on the edge of town.
Well, good evening, and thank you very much for joining us here back in the darkness on the edge of town. I'm your host, Dave Schrader. Along with me, as always, my lovely and affable assistant and producer and co-host and man-child, Mr. Tim Dennis. Good evening, Tim.
You forgot to wipe me.
Yeah, stop it. We are really excited to make a couple of announcements tonight. We are going to be offering two new trips, and these will be up on the site in the next couple of days. First trip that we're working on is a paranormal boot camp, if you will, and it'll be taking place in November at the Stanley. We wanted to shake up the Stanley trips that we've been doing and bring you something that's going to be a little bit different, and hopefully we've found the right mix for you. This is going to be more intensive. It's going to be actually where we check in Friday. We're there Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. Everybody goes home on Wednesday. We're going to be doing many investigations of the Stanley Hotel. We're going to be doing it in an educational setting, so you'll learn about setup and equipment. You'll learn about understanding the psychological effects of the paranormal. We'll be working on EVP tips and techniques. We're also going to do initial sweeps of all the rooms for each one of the investigative teams so that we can go in and get the initial EMF and temperature readings and different sightings so that we know what's going on in the room before we do the investigation later that night. We'll also be learning about intuition on investigations, working with psychic sensitive Chris Fleming. We'll be having exploration of ghosts with J.L. and Danila, communicating with the dead with Mark Macy. And we're going to be doing photography mistakes and flaws. Common mistakes that are made in the paranormal field. We're going to have Adam Bly and Steve Gonzalez, I hope, from Ghost Hunters, who we're working on having us be a part of this event with us. And we're also going to be doing the importance of the pre-interview for you paranormal teams out there. Finding your strengths in a team. Why we're here and they're there. Another talk by Chris Fleming talking about the spirit world interacting with ours. We'll also be doing a discussion of new equipment out in the paranormal field, hosted by Patrick Burns of the TV show Haunting Evidence. And we'll be doing talks on, is demonology the field for you as a team? We'll have a peer review of evidence, expert analysis of evidence, and we'll even take the top 10 pieces and go back and try to debunk those pieces, see if we can clear up and find out what those paranormal activities might have actually been, or rule them as a real paranormal event. So this is something we're going to be releasing more information on in the next week or so here. So you're going to want to keep checking out on the website. It's going to be called the Stanley Hotel Boot Camp, and it is a paranormal boot camp for those of you looking to experienced investigators that really want to step up and learn more about the field. And for those of you novices in the field that would like to get your feet wet and find out if this is something that you want to get a part of, we're going to give you the most comprehensive couple of days that you'll be able to spend with us. You get one-on-one experience, and working on guests like Jason Hawes and Steve from Ghost Hunters, Chris Fleming from Dead Famous, Patrick Burns from Haunting Evidence, Adam Bly, Tim, myself will be there as well. Going to have a great time. We hope that you'll join us out for that event. The other event, and we're very excited about this, we've just worked out the deals today with Tina Mattingly, one of the owners of Waverly Hills. Looks like we're going to be making a visit to Waverly Hills August 19th through the 22nd. And we have got some great stuff in store for you, so you're going to want to check it out. That information will also be up. We're going to be joined by Chris Fleming, Patrick Burns, John Zaffis, Adam Bly, Rosemary Ellen Guiley, Chad Kalick, and Adrian Villara of the new TV show Terror Normal. Tim and I will be there, of course. We've also got Keith Age we're going to be working on having at the event. And we're going to get to investigate Waverly Hills Sanitarium. And we're going to have a great overnight investigation there. So you're going to want to sign up for that right away. Tickets are going to be very fast moving. We're going to be doing a much smaller grouping at both the Stanley and at Waverly. We're going to only be offering it for between 100 to 120 people, which is about 150 people less than we normally have in an event. So with that said, I hope that you will check our website within this week. We're excited to see you out at these events. I think that you're going to love the changes that we're making. We're listening to what our listeners are saying about the events that we've had. They seem to love them. They've told us what they'd like changed, and we're trying to implement those for you. So please keep an eye on our sites. Check out darknessevents.com. But right now, we're going to go to our guest for the second half of the show this evening, and our guest is Mr. Charles Mattingly. And Charles Mattingly is one of the owners, along with his wife, Tina, of Waverly Hills Sanitarium. They purchased the property back in 2001 to save Waverly from the wrecking ball. Charles' father actually worked at Waverly in his teens. Joseph L. Mattingly worked in the bakery. Mr. Mattingly actually told Charles stories of Waverly and what was going on there, and that later inspired Charles to actually purchase Waverly Hills. And for the past almost 6 years, Charles and his wife Tina, along with many others, have been working very hard at restoring Waverly Hills. We'll also discuss tonight an upcoming Darkness event that I just mentioned to you. We're going to be doing an auction at that event, so you can have a piece of history and be a part of helping to restore one of the most haunted spots in the United States and probably one of the most beautiful looking buildings. Charles, it's a gorgeous looking building from the pictures I've seen. Aside, you take away the scariness and you take away the history of it, it's a beautiful building, and it would be a shame to see it fall into more disrepair.
Well, that's our whole goal around here, to turn this place around.
Well, now, Charles, let's talk. You said that when you were young, your father used to tell you stories of Waverly. Now, was he telling you the ghost stories, or was he just telling you of the crazy things that were going on there with the living?
Well, no. The stories were much different than what you might think. He was praising the place and was telling me how wonderful it was and how it saved so many people, and of all the great people that he met that were here, that were given their lives so that they could possibly make other people who had an infection of tuberculosis, you know, to have an easier life for what time they had left. And it's pretty heart-wrenching, maybe bring a tear to your eye, some of the stories that he would tell about the people up here that really worked hard to make it more comfortable for a lot of people who just ended up dying up here.
Well, why don't you start us off, Charles, with a history of Waverly Hills. When did it open? What were the major changes that went on with Waverly Hills? Go ahead and fill us in on that.
Well, I can kind of go back as far as I know, and right now over the phone, I'm sure I'll miss up some of the details.
That's all right.
You'll get the general story.
Sure.
A long time ago, there was a guy who owned the property about where the hospital sits right now. And he had an only daughter, and she decided that she wanted to be a school teacher because she has a little bit of school, and she came back home. And so her dad built a little bitty schoolhouse. And she called the little schoolhouse Waverly because one of the books that she had to read when she was at a finishing school was made by a poet named Waverly from England, and you know, and she really liked it, so that's what she named her schoolhouse. And so later on, as time went by and tuberculosis had these big breakouts, you know, the state was looking for good spots to put these tuberculosis centers, to have a good central location where people could get to them, but they weren't very close to a city, you know, where they were really far out from a city, but still centrally located, so a lot of people could go there. And they also were looking for the best place that could catch the breeze really well. And, you know, we're in the Ohio Valley, and Waverly Hills is fairly close to the Ohio River, and it's kind of up on one of the smaller ridges that is a little bit farther away from the Ohio River, where it could catch some of the southwest wind coming from flatter areas before it hits the river and goes over a ridge on the other side, on the Indiana side, which basically keeps a really good breeze going all the time. And one of the treatments for tuberculosis was fresh air, to give you the best fresh air that you could get.
Sure.
And so the patients would actually sit out here where the whole back of the building had very large windows in the back, where they weren't really windows, they were open spots with copper screens in them, where, you know, they sat out all night long, you know, getting fresh air, even in the wintertime, you know, to hopefully help their lung condition.
Right.
And so that's the reason that the state kind of picked out the spot. and the landowner donated the building to the state, and the state acquired a lot of other acreage around it. And they wanted to make it a self-reliant little community where they didn't have to rely on too many people from the outside supplying anything that they would need up here, you know, other than, you know, just what would be dropped off maybe through a railroad car, you know, like your flour and sugar. But everything else was grown, or even, you know, the beef and the pork were all grown on site.
Okay.
You know, to make it a self-reliant community.
Mm-hmm.
And so it turned into be a very tight little knit community here with a lot of people who all had the same common goal, was to help someone. But what was underlying under all this is the people who came here to help other people who had a very good chance of dying themselves, because they would, you know, eventually catch the disease and be just like the patients that they were taking care of.
Mm.
And in the hospital on the first floor, there is actually a little section that was reserved just for the doctors and nurses that got sick that couldn't help anymore.
Wow. So it stayed a tuberculosis hospital. Now, where did sanitarium come in? Now, a lot of us consider that to be where they lock up people that are, you know, mentally insane or criminally insane. It was that ever the case?
Well, no, I think where the confusion comes in is I think there's a sanitarium and a sanatorium.
Okay.
And a sanatorium is where you go to get well. And so when somebody says sanitarium, they're just saying the word wrong.
It
was a sanatorium where people went to get well.
Okay.
And so, but there is a way that the crazy people stories come into play on this. In about 1961, after all the vaccinations came out through the 50s, tuberculosis pretty much was wiped out. And the state, you know, had a big, you know, a bunch of big buildings that they needed to get rid of that were tuberculosis centers, and they didn't know what to do with them. So they eventually sold them off to private people to have other uses. And this one up here was sold to a doctor who set it up as a geriatrics, which in other terms is basically a old folks home, retirement home, or a place for mentally ill people that, you know, the family couldn't take care of anymore.
Right.
And so after 61, that's where all the story about all the crazy people came from. And that's what my dad would tell me the stories about. After he'd tell me what a wonderful place it was, then he would tell me that now, you know, of course, that when I was a young child, before they closed it for the last time, that it was a very rotten place to go to and be around, because the conditions weren't very good up here for any of the patients. Basically, you know, just trying to take care of people who basically can't take care of themselves, who probably had mental problems. You could imagine the trouble that the people went through up here, you know, trying to take
sure.
care of the patient.
No doubt. Now, how many people is it estimated have actually died on site there?
Well, we've been given estimates from a few different people and groups that say they've done a lot of investigations, but no one has ever put a sheet in front of me that it was definite of exactly the amount of numbers. And when someone will say that 63,000 people died of tuberculosis, well, what we have found out ourselves from doing the best investigations that we can, there was about 63,000 people who died of tuberculosis in a, I'd say about a, maybe about a 10 to 15 mile radius of the Louisville area.
Okay.
And what had happened is if someone died of tuberculosis, they might not have necessarily died here at Waverly, but they were probably sent up here to Waverly just about the time they were going to die or after they died, and then they would do autopsies here to make sure that they had tuberculosis. And the reason that they did that is because they wanted to know for sure if they had tuberculosis so they could go back to people who had been close and family members of the person that died to warn them of the possibility that they might have tuberculosis. And so they would confirm it here. So when they talk about the 63,000 people over the total period that it was here, it probably wasn't 63,000 people dying here, but within the community and also people who were brought it here from trains from other states to stay here, because this was a pretty renowned place for the cutting edge treatment of tuberculosis. So that number can't be nailed down as 63,000 people, but I tell you what, it was a lot of people that died, and a lot of people died at Waverly Hills.
Were there any reports of actually any employees dying there? I know there's the rumor of the hanging nurse and the, you know, murdered nurse and so on and so forth, but is there any proof or any truth to any of the employees there actually dying while they worked there?
Oh, yes. Okay. Yes, absolutely. I mean, you know, that was very common, and if you look back on a lot of the workers that worked up here, yeah, there was a lot of them died. And if you trace them back, you know, to, you know, find the deaths, you know, you can find out through the family, you know, where they were when they died, and they'll say, well, they were working up at Waverly. And it was a pretty common thing.
So at what point did it become the Waverly that we know it to be now, this decrepit building that's haunted by thousands of spirits of the deceased? When did this come into effect? Or was it haunted, believed to be haunted, when it became the geriatric home?
Well, I tell you what, I have stories that were told to me by a few survivors that were here while it was a tuberculosis center.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the survivors was here as a young child at 5 years old. And he still lives today within about 10 miles of Waverly right now. And he was brought up here having the childhood tuberculosis.
Mm-hmm.
And he had to stay in one of the children's wards up here, which is a building that was kind of built off to the side of the main building, which is it's all been knocked down. There's been a whole bunch of demolition up here before we got here that knocked down all the outer buildings around the main building. And he told the story of you know, coming up here and all of the things that happened to him, and his experiences were very positive, and he feels that he wouldn't be alive today if he didn't get the treatment and care that he got up here. And he ended up, you know, he's a healthy man that went through World War II. He was over in Japan at the end of the war, and he was married. Now his wife's dead, and he's still healthy and kicking around, but he did have tuberculosis up here. And he would tell me the story that him and all the kids would hear when they would all be in the ward with all their beds lined up. There'd be like 20, 30 beds kind of all lined up within about 4 or 5 feet from each other. They would hear these footsteps and stuff walking around at night. And the nurses would come in, and they'd be hollering at the nurses, you know, come over here, and they'd be all scared, you know, what are these noises, what are these sounds they hear? And the nurse would tell them that no, those aren't ghosts. They're not out here to get you. Those are your angels, and they're watching over you. But he says, the child, he said they would be a whole bunch of them just trembling, scared to death, thinking for sure that they saw ghosts and heard ghosts all moving around, you know, as young children.
Sure.
And I imagine that some of that was from a vivid imagination of a child, but then again, he flat told me, he says, I don't know about you, but he says, I've seen ghosts.
Well, we're going to take a quick break here, Charles. For all of you tuning in, thank you very much. Our guest this evening is Charles Mattingly, one of the owners of Waverly Hills Sanatorium, which is purported to be one of the most haunted spots in the United States. When we come back, we're going to talk more about the ghost stories and the activity that continues today. You're listening to the Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show.
It will keep you on the edge of your seat.
I must have drank me about 15 Dr. Peppers.
I gotta pay.
Just don't get any on the floor. Hurry back. There is more to come from the darkness on the edge of town.
For 58 years, Fate has consistently supplied its loyal readership with a broad array of true reports of the strange and unknown. Fate is a factual magazine containing articles by experts in all walks of life, and by others just like you who have something dynamic, significant, and truthful to say. Keep up with the latest on angels and miracles, psychic phenomena, ghosts, UFOs, archaeological hotspots, alternative science, and much, much more.
to receive your free Fate magazine, call now at 1-800-728-2730 or visit our website at www.fatemag.com. That's 1-800-728-2730 or www.fatemag.com. What are you waiting for? Your fate awaits.
Are you tired of reading about what couple in Hollywood is breaking up or divorcing? Have you ever wondered where you can find the news that covers the subjects that you are really interested in? I would like to invite you to visit SupernaturalNews.com. Supernatural News uses the latest internet technology to search for the topics we know you will be interested in reading. News of the latest Bigfoot, UFO, or Loch Ness Monster sightings. Read about the latest conspiracy theories and urban legends. Supernatural News, where belief and reality merge.
The smell of voodoo hangs in the air. Either that or Dave and Tim had the seven bean salad for dinner.
Don't nobody go in the bathroom for about 35, 45 minutes. Somebody open the window.
Welcome back to the darkness, or whatever is hanging in the air, on the edge of town.
Well, good evening and welcome back to the show. We appreciate you joining us here. Our guest this evening is Charles Mattingly, one of the owners of Waverly Hills Sanatorium out in Louisville, Kentucky. I have a question here from one of our listeners, Charles. How far is Frankfort from Louisville?
About 50 miles.
50 miles? Okay, because he was saying that he had a grandfather who died of tuberculosis in a sanatorium in Kentucky back in 1938. He was 21. So he was just wondering, I guess, that was the, wondering if it was near there. Was there another sanatorium out there in Frankfort?
Yes, Frankfort had its own sanatorium, and there were actually two other sanatoriums in the Louisville area.
Okay.
But they were much smaller.
All right. Well, now let's start talking about the ghosts that take over. I mean, when was the last day that this was open? It was in the 60s, was that it?
In 61 is when the tuberculosis center shut down and took off as a geriatrics. And then that lasted up into the 70s, early 70s.
Oh, okay. So through the 70s. And then it folded then. Who was taking it over?
Actually, I think the doors didn't actually close till 81.
Okay. And then did it just sit there dormant? Was it
owned? Yes. It sat here dormant, not a soul in it. And
well, that's not true now, Charles.
Well,
you know there's a whole bunch of souls in it.
Not a living person in it.
Okay.
Okay. And it just turned into a haven for all of the local kids and gangs and hoodlums to hang out. It was the local folklore of the area here, and the previous owners to me had a very, very hard time trying to keep track of the building and keep the kids out. And until I kind of got a hold of it, I finally got a kind of hold on this and am able to keep from any more destruction happening up here.
Now, when you took over, did you know about the ghost stories?
I didn't really know about them or really even pay attention to them. I wasn't even thinking about it.
Right. You were just trying to save a beautiful old building, right?
Yeah, and that's the only thing that was on my mind. The paranormal end of this didn't even hit me until about a week after I got the place, and then you know, everything changed. I had no idea of about paranormal events, and as a child and growing up, I never did believe in ghosts, and I never thought much about it. If somebody said that they seen a ghost or they were, you know, like ghost hunter style people, I just think, oh, it's just another Looney Tune out there. And then,
yes, we are.
I mean, then it started happening to me, and then it's like everything changed. It was a very different experience for me. I was one of them kids that I really wasn't scared to walk in the dark. You know, I grew up kind of on a farm, and I'd go, you know, walking through a field at night, out of the woods to a pond to fish in the middle of the night. I never was scared of, you know, too much anything, you know.
Right.
I figured, you know, it was an animal or a person, you know. I might be scared of that, but, I didn't think about ghosts. And then I got a hold of this place, and it really changed my mind.
What was your first paranormal experience there?
Well, the first thing that hit me is when I first got it, I had, a really hard time. Every time I come up here, I would have, like, kids, you know, go to chase after me and throw rocks and, you know, try to run me off because, you know, I'm trying to run them out of the building, and this was like their domain. And, you know, I had a real hard time every time I come up here. I'd have to, like, bring people with me and, you know, to try to run these kids out, you know. And I was trying to get an assessment on how much damage was on the building. And I was taking my video recorder and trying to go through all the different rooms and record stuff. And, you know, I was just recording, but I wasn't really playing it back. You know, I was just trying to get everything I could. And I got a call just as soon as I got a hold of the place from the Fox Network for this World's Scariest Places. And I'm going, I don't know what you're talking about, you know. And he says, well, you know, we've had all these people that, you know, gave us emails that this place is haunted. And I said, yeah, you know, I've heard something about that, but, I don't really know. He says, they said, well, can you send us some footage so we could just see what the building looks like? And I said, well, sure, I got a bunch of it. And so I took and looked through all this film that I had taken, and I just could not believe what I had on film. I just kept looking, and I saw, you know, figures moving around. I saw faces would come out of orbs. There was, like, a different color. It almost looked like lightning bolts just going through the air. And in the same film, you know, it was at like a cassette. You know, it was an older style camera. I would film, like, a little something at my house or out by the car or someplace else, and then I would go in there and film some more of the building. And the film was perfect without any flaws at other places, but I'd walk in the building, and just the wildest stuff would happen with this film. And so I told the people at Triage that were putting this together for Fox, I said, well, you know, you're not going to believe this stuff. So I sent it to them. And then no sooner I sent it to them, they called me back. They said, we got to see this. And so they sent a bunch of guys out to, you know, see me.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, we got to see the place. And they went in, and they were going, oh, my God. He said, we saw this, we saw that. And I said, well, okay. You know, and I was still in this, you know, kind of, you know, not sure what to think or believe. And from there, they came out and shot the first little show that was done here. And then that set my mind to thinking, well, you know, maybe this place really is haunted. And I really got something here that I didn't even think that I had. You know, I was looking at a giant project of an old building, and now it took on a whole other.
Charles, if I'd have come home and told my wife, oh, yeah, by the way, I guess the place is crazy haunted, she'd have told me to sell it. What did Tina do when you finally told her about this?
Are you still there?
Yeah, Charles, are the ghosts messing with the phone?
Yeah, I think so. The phone is going kind of funny, yeah.
Okay. What? Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, I can hear you fine now.
What, when you came home and told your wife about this and that you had this video footage of shadows moving around and things coming out of the dark at you, did she tell you, oh, honey, let's sell it and buy an RV and go see the rest of it?
She was very angry about me for buying the place.
Okay.
She said that I was nuts. You know, why would you even take on a project of this size? What the hell is wrong with you? And, and I kept telling her, I said, it's 29 acres next to a golf course, Tina. Just don't get too excited about this. Everything will be just fine.
Right, exactly.
You know, everything will work out, you know. And she was, you know, just, you know, going on, you know, why did you do such a stupid thing? And I says, you know, Tina, I had to, you know, it was, you know, from every story I ever heard of as a kid, there's no way that I could let, you know, what was going to happen to this building happen if we're going to tear it down. And I'm telling you that this building doesn't need to be torn down, and it's in great shape, and it could be put back to use. And so that was the conversation we were having. She was against it. And then when I started telling her about the ghost stuff, she very slowly, over about a two-year period, started to come around. And now if you talk to my wife, she is into this ghost hunting like you would not believe. I mean, she's got a group of people right now in the building she's going through, and they're just having a ball.
Well, let me ask you this. One of the people on our boards is asking a question. Rowdy wants to know, has there been any injuries or fatalities at Waverly since it closed?
Since it closed in, I think when they closed in 81,
mm-hmm.
there has been, from the hoodlums being up here and doing things they weren't supposed to do.
Uh-huh.
There has been quite a few injuries, and from what I have heard, it's stories that were told to me by the police that never were kind of like reported to the police. or to the
to the news,
to the media about what happened up here, because they just didn't want to, you know, throw any more negative publicity about the place. But yeah, there were actually some murders, rapes. There were some bodies dropped off up here, and kind of what this was, it was like a place that was outside of Louisville. That was, you know, in a very secluded area, all surrounded by trees, and you know that it was just like, you know, you had to walk for, you know, 15 minutes through a wooded area just to get up here. And it turned out to be a great place for hoodlums to come up and overdose and shoot their dope and drop off a dead body. And it was just like it turned into a terrible spot in Louisville.
I would guess so.
And you know, it was, when I came up here, I mean, I couldn't hardly believe the people that I would run into that wanted to get in the building or would be in the building, that, you know, they'd pull a knife on me or they'd throw a brick at me or something like that when I tell them to leave.
See, that happens to me every time I go home. I got six kids.
and you know, like I say, you know, I took on a pretty large undertaking just trying to take this building back from all of the hoodlums and dope addicts and people that were just abusing the building for years.
Wow. What Rowdy also wants to know, has anything creepy ever followed you home?
You know, I don't really think that I don't look at any of this as creepy, but as far as the following me home stuff, my wife just recently was telling me about, you know, movements in our house, and she had taken some pictures, and she has them up here. She was just showing them to me about a week ago, about some orbs that she saw floating around in the house, and took pictures of them, and they have faces in them, and they were pretty weird pictures.
Wow.
So it could be possible.
Now, do you get a lot of wildlife that go through there? Snakes, rodents?
You know what? That's something that's just very odd about this building. You know, when we go in there, you'd think that there would be all kind of like mice and rats and snakes. You find nothing in this building. I mean, there are no... I mean, you don't even find insects in the building.
Well, that's good, because, see, if you'd have told me there were snakes, I would have had to cancel our event there. You understand that?
I mean, yeah, you can find snakes all around the outside, you know, all around the woods. But as far as inside the building, no. I mean, that's one thing that we remark about all the time. You know, because when it got the place, there was no doors or windows on it. All the windows had all been busted out, and there was no doors on it. And it took us quite a while just to board it up, you know, to be able to keep people out.
Sure.
But, you know, we figured that there'd be all kind of wildlife in there. There'd be birds everywhere in there. But still, today, even with, you know, all the windows in the back of the building that are still open, you go up here, and there are no birds in the building. And and we don't know why, you know, that wildlife does not, you know, have it, you know, use this
That's
building.
That's kind of weird,
you know,
too, huh?
Yeah, it's very odd, you know, and we have a lot of people that, you know, remark, you know, when they come up here, they say, you know, we were looking around, you know, because we were sure that we'd see, you know, mice and rats all running around us. No, you won't find a one.
Wow. Now, Goosey Bell from our website also wants to know, what's the most common report that you hear from those that are investigating Waverly?
Well, it's the most common thing that happens to just about everybody is what we call a black mass moving around. And basically what that means is you're looking down a hall or into a room, and you see a figure or something move that blocks out light that you were just seeing a minute ago, that kind of looks like a figure of a person.
Sure.
And then so as you see it and the person that's with you see it, maybe 10 other people with you all see it at the same time. We wait until everybody is sure that they see the same thing.
Hmm.
And what they're thinking is that someone else is in the building, or, you know, they could be around, and they're walking down the hall somewhere or walking in and out of a room.
Mm-hmm.
And when everybody says, yeah, I see it, we'll have all our lights off, and then, you know, we'll have our flashlights, and we'll say, all right, turn your lights on, and we'll shine our lights down the hall or into the room, and there's nobody there.
Wow.
And so that is really, really common.
Hey, as a follow-up question, Rowdy would like to know, too, you mentioned about the orbs. Did Tina see those orbs flying around in your house without the camera?
Without the camera, yeah.
Wow, okay.
Yeah, and that's in the orbs that are up here, that we talk about, are very, very rare. We've only seen them about four times in the whole time we've been up here. The ones we talk about that you actually see glowing and floating around. And those, when you actually get to see one for yourself and you have one float in front of you or sit there and hover or move around,
sure.
You know, you just don't know. It's hard to explain, the reaction that you have by seeing this. You say, well, if somebody saw, they say, well, it wouldn't bother me. It's just this, something glowing, floating around like a balloon or something, And I said, no, when it happens to you,
oh, yeah.
I mean, it changes something about you because you cannot explain why there is like a ball of light that floats out in front of you.
Have you started selling adult diapers for people that are coming to investigate yet?
A what?
Adult diapers. I would tell you, I would have filled my pants if I'd have been walking around and seen a black shadow figure coming at me or a light ball floating in front of me. That's going to be weird, Charlie. I don't know.
No. Well, I say you don't actually see this too often, but a lot of people in their film will see orbs.
Sure.
And we hate to, hurt people's feelings or anything, but
right.
Most of the time we can debunk a lot of the orbs and their dust.
Right, with dust and bugs.
Yeah, and there is a real difference in catching a real orb and a piece of dust.
Well, we have a couple.
And it doesn't take a lot, to figure out what is dust and what isn't.
Yeah, exactly. Well, we have a couple more questions here from our board, then we're going to take a quick break. Shay Queen Geek would like to know, she hears that most of the activity happens on the fourth floor, and it seems to be the most dangerous. What are your feelings? Why would you believe that? Is that true, first of all? And if so, why do you feel that it's taking place on the fourth floor?
In my opinion, it's not the fourth floor. I've had something happen to me on every floor in there. And to me, the first floor is much more happens on that floor than any other one.
Mm-hmm.
To me, now, if you want to see the black masses move around, I'd say the third floor is probably the best. But you'll see it also on the fourth floor. Right. But to me, the first floor is where the weirdest stuff that's ever happened is been on the first floor.
All right.
And I had a light bulb. This is when we first got the place. There was no electricity running to the building whatsoever. I mean, the lines were like cut. There was nothing here.
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't even have our temporary pole set out here, to get our light into our work area. We had a light bulb that was, just hanging down from the ceilings, one of them old clear ones,
Sure.
And when we were in there, just shoveling some stuff out of a room, I had a couple guys that was kind of helping me out. We were trying to shovel out some rooms where a bunch of plaster fell from the ceiling. And we had that light bulb just come on and start glowing.
Wow.
And this was on the first floor. I could keep going on, but and sure. We had the Edison box up here. The Edison box.
Oh, sure.
It only worked on the first floor.
Hmm.
And the Edison box was a very, a very, very fun experience.
Yeah, I bet that's the Frank's box or Edison's box. Is that it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Some people came by here, and they had this, this old time tube radio that they had built or
right.
Someone built a long time ago that was on some kind of low megahertz cycle thing that's supposed to be
keep
close
scanning.
To what your aura
right.
of a living organism puts off. And they walked around with this radio when they were, I had a few electric, I have electric in the building now. I have some outlets, that run up down the hall so I can, have light in the rooms and things like that. But we don't have it like restored throughout the building like
sure.
it used to be, but we have got a temporary lighting ran all through the first floor.
Now you're doing live events here all the time, right? So if people are interested in investigating, they can contact you, and we have a link on our website. You can go. Is it WaverlyHillsSanitarium.com?
Yeah, WHS History.
Okay. Yeah, and we have a link for it right on our website. So if you want to click on there, you can go there and check it out. I have another question from Mac. Drizzle on our website wants to know if do you have a lot of activity that takes place on the grounds outside of the hospital itself?
Yes, we do. It's not as much as in the building, but we have some really good pictures that were taken almost 5 years ago It was actually done by a Indiana State Trooper that came here with one of his groups, and they took a picture outside the building of what we call the courtyard area, and it's a picture of a guy who was like leaning against a tree with like one leg on the ground and the other leg kind of bent up, like with his foot like against the tree,
right,
smoking a cigarette.
Wow.
And you can see right through him, but you look at it and it's plain as day. And you know, and we still have the same area, and we knew where the guy was standing and where the tree is. And then from there you look at what in the environment would make it look like that person.
Right.
And then we went back different times and took pictures again and again in the same exact area, looking at the same exact tree to see if we could get this image to come back. You know, wondering if it would had to do with light reflections off of the building behind it, or if there was some type of maybe there was something in the concrete, some type of, chemical compound or something, that maybe
right.
was in the concrete, that might reflect the light, and, trying to debunk this. And while we were doing this, we got another picture that looks exactly like the same guy that was leaning against the tree, except now it was about 10 or 15 feet a feet away from where that tree was, just standing there.
Okay.
And when you look at it, it looks like the same person, but then again, you see right through it.
Sure.
And so that's kind of odd. But the courtyard is where we call the active area for the outside of the building.
All right. Well, Charlie, I want to thank you very much for the time you spent with us tonight, and we'll have you on again after we do the live investigation there with our team, and we look forward to meeting you. I'm actually going to be out there in a couple weeks and get a chance to meet you and Tina with another group that's coming out there, so I'll look forward to that. And thank you very much for spending some time with us this evening, and hopefully we can have you back again, like I said, after we come out and do the investigation. And if you have any new stories that pop up, you can always feel free to give us a call at the show, too, and we'll bring you on the air and talk about them, all right?
Well, I tell you what, I never get tired about talking about this place.
Well, that's amazing. Thank you for all the great work you're doing in helping to restore that place and keep it alive. I appreciate it. I know our listeners appreciate it, and all of the paranormal enthusiasts out there do. Charlie, again, people can check out your website by going right to our website and clicking on the picture of Waverly Hills. We want to thank you very much for joining us, and for all the rest of you, if you can stick with us, we're going to be back. With the last few minutes of the show, we're going to talk to the friends from Terror Normal, Adrian Villara and Chad Kalick, and they're going to tell us about their experiences also at Waverly Hills and about the episodes that they've got coming out. Thank you very much for listening to Darkness on the Edge of Town. We'll be back with more right after this.
Are UFOs real? Does Bigfoot exist? Was Emily Rose really possessed? Who is the next American Idol?
She bangs! She bangs! Oh, baby, but she moves! She moves!
Thank
I'm
you.
Wasted by the way
Thank
she...
you.
We try to answer these questions and more each week on The Darkness on the Edge of Town.
Use the words of Mary Thompson, there is no greater pain than the loss of a loved one. So many things you never thought you would have to do, so many decisions you never thought you would have to face. Mary describes the painful journey of losing her husband to a chronic illness in her new book, With Angels Beside Me, A Caregiver's Story. With Angels Beside Me not only takes you through Mary's struggles, but also serves as a guide to caregivers everywhere that are looking to find peace, guidance, and hope in their own situations. With Angels Beside Me, A Caregiver's Story is available right now at Amazon.com. Just search for the title on Amazon or for Mary herself. With Angels Beside Me is only $9.95 and available to ship anywhere around the world. If you know someone who's losing a loved one, or if you yourself are facing some sort of loss of a family member, be sure to read Mary Thompson's With Angels Beside Me, A Caregiver's Story. Available right now on Amazon.com.
George Clooney, Carmen Diaz, Oprah, Ellen, George Bush, Diane Pelosi.
What are you doing?
I'm making a list of people I want to tell about charity checks.
Do you know any of those people?
No, but if I can get to them, they might want to tell the public how cool it is to use giving certificates as presents instead of gift certificates.
Giving certificates?
Yeah, you know. They can be used as a donation to any legitimate charity. So the person who gives a charity check gets the tax deduction, and the person who gets one decides where the money goes.
Why don't you just tell people directly about charity checks yourself?
Like anyone would listen to me.
www.charitychecks.us for information about the perfect present.
Well, no, they're not going to listen to you like that. But if you just said that charity checks provides a unique way to turn your gift money into giving money, they might pay attention.
Catchy.
Then you just casually say the web address, charitychecks.us, America's Giving Certificates.
I still think a celebrity endorsement would be more effective.
If you read Taps Paramag every month, you'll be able to tell the difference between the absurd.
Could not go to work because Bigfoot stole my car.
And the creepy. Taps Paramag takes you where few would ever go on purpose. From exclusive interviews with the cast of The Ghost Hunters to the latest trends in technology in the field of the paranormal. To join our journey, order at tapsparamag.com.
Are you tired of reading about what couple in Hollywood is breaking up or divorcing? Have you ever wondered where you can find the news that covers the subjects that you are really interested in? I would like to invite you to visit SupernaturalNews.com. Supernatural News uses the latest internet technology to search for the topics we know you will be interested in reading. News of the latest Bigfoot, UFO, or Loch Ness monster sightings. Read about the latest conspiracy theories and urban legends. Supernatural News, where belief and reality merge.
Do you hear loud moans and banging on your walls? Next time, pay for the better hotel room.
Oh, no more Yankee, my Winky. The donga needs food.
Welcome back to the darkness on the edge of town with your hosts, Dave Schrader and Tim Dennis.
Good evening. Welcome back to the show. This evening we're talking about Waverly Hills Sanatorium out in Louisville, Kentucky. And our guest for the first part of the show was the owner, Charles Mattingly. And actually joining us here for the second part of the show, a couple of good friends of ours now from the show Terror Normal, we've got Chad Kalick and Adrian Villar. Good evening, guys. Welcome to the show.
Yo! What's up?
Glad to have you guys back with us.
What up, what up, what up?
Guess what? What's We're on the edge of town.
That is awesome. Welcome back to the show. We're glad you guys are joining us here. And for those of you that were lucky enough to come out to the Stanley event, you got to meet Chad and Adrian there. We're going to also have them out at the Eastern State Penitentiary event in June. And we just locked them down. They're going to be going with us out in August to Waverly Hills. Woo-hoo. So you'll actually get to see part of their first episode and also part two of their first episode, which is the actual investigation that they did at Waverly Hills. And that's why we wanted to have you guys on. What's your opinion now? Honestly, you guys spent, 6 days and nights in this place, right?
A total of eight days total between the two trips. Yeah, it's pretty insane.
Yeah, we'd have to say that place is definitely got a lot going on. It's a lot of different types of, I would say, spirits. It's not like, you know, you get the same type of reactions every time. You agree, right, Chad?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of stuff going on. I mean, everything from people being touched to EVPs to just hearing audible voices just coming down hallways answering questions. I mean, I went into it very, very, very skeptical and walked out of there a firm believer in in ghosts and apparitions.
Yeah, that place is for real. Is Charlie on still, or is he gone?
Nope, he's gone. We're going to spend a little bit of time with you. We've only got about 7 minutes here to spend time with you guys, but we wanted to hear a little bit more about your experiences. Now, Charlie was telling us the first floor was crazy activity for him. First floor, and he said third floor has some more of the shadowy people. When you guys were there, which floors did you find to be the most? Now, one thing I found was interesting. You said that the death tunnel, the chute itself, you really got no.
We got nothing. We were in and out there. Adrian went down there alone. He could talk about that, but we got nothing there. Back to the first floor, though, I can tell you, when we were first in there, first round through with just Adrian and I, everything seemed to be centered around the fourth floor and the third. But our last night in there, which I don't want to give too much away about part two, but our last night in there, let's just say that the first floor went absolutely crazy, and, you know, people wanted out, put it that way.
It switched up on us a little bit. Like, the first time it was, like you said, the third and fourth floor, and then the second time it seemed like it was the first and second floor.
Yeah, it's really bizarre. It's kind of. I tell you what, man, the place is just so haunted.
That's why it's got so much going on that, like, you can't. There's so much different things going on, and plus it's so humongous. I mean, it's 108,000 square feet.
Yeah,
you know, it's insane.
What would you guys say now with the amount of nights that you spent there? How many nights would you think that you actually experienced real paranormal activity at Waverly?
Every night.
Now, was there anything at the time that you thought, wow, this is crazy, and then you know, you went back the next morning when it was light and you realized, oh, that was just a play of light or a reflection?
Here's the thing. Whenever you go in there, I mean, at first, the place is so visually menacing. I mean, you just see it and you're like, Jesus. I mean, in the broad daylight and a sunny day, you know, you don't want to step anywhere near the place. But I think that once you're in there, it takes a couple hours, I think, to kind of, you know, get, okay, I got my bearings. I know where I'm at. Yes, it looks scary. And I think you kind of calm down. I mean, I think there's some, initially you're just spooked out. So, of course, yeah, you jump or you think you see something. But I will pretty much guarantee you that I would say the majority of the stuff that happened upon review of the tapes, not only did we find out that that stuff was real, but we found other stuff going on that we didn't even notice at the time. So it's, right. It's really active.
And it's funny, too, because, like, there's, like, a time during the day between, like, 4 and 7 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
It was another peak, you know, time for paranormal activity. Chad and I both recognized that. I don't know, on the episode 1, part 1, you'll see a photograph that was done during the day, and you know, in the bonus footage that we're going to have, you're going to see some stuff Chad and I encountered again during the day that was, you know, some pretty freaky stuff.
Yeah, probably one of the best or one of the better ghost photos I've ever seen. I was actually fortunate enough to take, and it was during the day down on the floor. I saw something with my eyes moving up on the fourth floor. I mean, it looked like a shadow moving like you hear about. And I just popped off a couple shots, and one of them came back, I mean, in God's glory, right there, leaning over the balcony. So it's really weird, you know, David, that the place is, it's incredibly, incredibly active with legitimate paranormal activity.
Now, yeah. Shay from our boards has got a question for you. She was curious if, you know, with the people that have viewed it, have you gotten any flap or a backslap at all on the fact that Adrian walked the whole place alone? I mean, it always seems to be the number one no-no about doing a paranormal investigation is going alone.
You know what? Really, like, thumbs up about it.
Yeah, people have, I've been reading a lot of, like, I get a lot of, you're crazy, you're out of your mind, I need to, you know, commit you,
right.
You know, that kind of stuff. But, like, there was actually a really cool chick on the sci-fi board that asked that same question to me. And, you know, because I guess it seemed like I did that with ease, that, you know, she wanted to know if I should, you know, tell people it's okay to walk through a haunted location by yourself. But, you know, as I said on the board, that I do believe you should stick to the rule of not going into a place like Waverly Hills by yourself. There is a lot that could happen. That is something that I do for myself to make personal contact that I feel I need. And, you know, I do not recommend it, but I'd have to say that was, you know, one of the scariest moments I had, because I do a lot of that, you know, by myself thing. Chad can tell you.
No, he does. Adrian has this a self-perpetuating need to put himself near death. No, but really, I think Adrian has the right on advice. I mean, I don't think that people should try that. I mean, Adrian is a very spiritual person. He's very much in touch with a lot of his own beliefs. And, you know, part of our show, I think, is pushing kind of the barrier. And I think it's part of, you know, what paranormal brings. And it is special and unique, and we've, you know, most of the feedback has been really positive, and people have been like, wow, that's really awesome. But I know I've had at least 15 people that I've talked to online that I've been like, yeah, I think it's cool, but, you know, if you go to Waverly, you need to have safety first and foremost in mind. I mean, one of the things we're going to show on the extra footage, too, is at one point I suffered a laceration on my forehead. Now, since we didn't know when it occurred or when it happened, or I had no idea how it happened, we didn't include it as evidence because, I could not say, oh, it happened here.
Mm-hmm.
But I know I went in, had a stocking cap on, a hat on it, and a hoodie over with no cut, and came back out, and my head was bleeding. And
wow.
I know that stuff has occurred before. I've seen some footage in Rosemary's her speech and her presentation where somebody else with Chris Moon was cut in there as well. Ultimately, I think
actually, it was the same spot
place.
on the head.
The head.
It's the exact
you
same
know,
spot.
I think it's a safe place. I mean, I you know, would tell everybody in the world to go there. But I don't know that, you know, I mean, if you're, I don't think you should go into any place unless you ultimately feel like you should, that you're safe. And,
right.
And we love Waverly. We think it's incredible, and we urge people to go there.
And we can't wait to go again. I mean, if anybody out there feels that they want to go to a haunted location. They're okay with possibly being touched, pushed, you know, yelled at, you know, communicated with by something that's really not there, supposedly. You know, so I mean, if that's what you're ready to do, let's do this.
Well, guys, we only have
paranormal,
1 minute.
We go there.
We only have 1 minute left on the show. You have episode. You have the first part of episode one up on your site at terrornormal.com. Correct.
Correct.
And when will the part two be up there?
You know, very soon. There's some debate over going on right now. We have a lot of things going on with the show right now.
Right.
And a lot of things that people are talking to us about when we should and shouldn't release things. So just please be a little patient with us. We just put a webisode up with some really impressive evidence from the Stanley that people are really reacting to strongly right now. So please enjoy that.
I'd have to say that's some of the best footage right there, too, that's caught in a long time at the Stanley that we have on our webisode.
Yeah, so
and be looking for more webisodes as the time progresses. And we also have our MySpace page, www.myspace.com/terrornormal.
Yep. And back to answer the question, you know, episode or part two of episode one will surface here sometime in the future.
Great.
We'll keep
guys,
you all posted.
Thank you very much. And if you want to see a great new show, go check out terrornormal.com. Thank you all for tuning into The Darkness on the Edge of Town with us each week. If you're a new listener, thank you for finding us, and we hope that we've earned your respect and that you'll be back with us again next week. Again, we'll have a brand new show for you, so make sure to tune in. We're here every Sunday night from 10 to midnight Central Time. If you can't stay up late with us, then make sure that you check out our archives when we have the show up within 48 hours of the time that you hear it live. Thanks again to everybody out there. We'll see you next week.